Welcome one and all to another episode of The Damage Report. I'm John Arola, very lucky to be joined on this fine Tuesday by writer, comedian, commentator, and much more. Trey Crowder returns to The Damage Report. Trey, it's great to have you here.
Hey, John. Yeah, good to be back. Always a pleasure.
Great to have you here. It's been a bit since we've spoken. How have things been going? How are you surviving in this time of balloons everywhere? How are you doing?
Well, I don't know. It's like there's stretches where it seems like not much is going on, punctuated by bursts of the sort of, you know, unbridled lunacy we've become accustomed to over the past few years in this country. So it's like, it's sort of jarring, but at times it's not, it seems like it's not as bad. And then at times it seems it's even worse. Mm-hmm. So I can't really get a handle on it. You know what I mean? It's certainly interesting times, which is like, an ancient curse, I believe.
it is. Make you live in
interesting times. Yeah, right. So that checks
out. Yeah. Yeah. I think the way you described it is probably how I expect at least most of this year to go, where in terms of like day to day, like what is Congress up to, it's probably going to be even less productive than usual, but occasionally something maddening is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we have examples of that for today's show. So thank you for being here, Trey. Thank you, audience, for joining us. As always, I promise you, we've got some fun news. We've got some deranged news. We've got some news update on Southern states' attempts to try to crack down on people freely accessing pornography. It's spreading almost as fast as pornography. So we're gonna have that for you as well. And you know, we got a comedian on the show. I had to get Trey's opinion on the return of a legendary comedian to Fox Nation. So we'll be talking about that at the close of the program. In advance of all that though, please hit the like button, share the stream so that everyone knows we're live. And if you wanna reach out to us with any super chats, tweets, comments, anything like that, you can, and we will return as we go. But with all that said, Trey, are you ready to start the show?
Let's rock, let's do it.
Okay, let's do it. Let's start off with a little bit of lunacy. There's a lot of questions I would not wanna be asked by Donald Trump, but here's an especially fun one. What do you think of firing squads? That's apparently what he's been casually asking his friends and associates, aides. Firing squads and executions are back on his mind. And he's got some bold plans to give a little bit of a glow up to executions. Wait until you find out what he's been thinking of. Specifically, he's talked about once he becomes president again, bringing back death by firing squad, by hanging, and possibly even by guillotine, which has a nice sort of European flair to it. He's also discussed group executions, which are fun and efficient. Trump has floated these ideas while discussing planned campaign rhetoric and policy desires, as well as his disdain for President Biden's approach to crime. Biden very notably has not rounded up groups of people and chopped their heads off in public. So it is fair to criticize him for that. Apparently, even better though than these big group executions, hangings, and all that. In at least one instance late last year, and by the way, 3 to 4, I think, sources were used by Rolling Stone on this. Trump has privately mused about the possibility of creating a flashy government-backed video ad campaign that would accompany a federal revival of these execution methods. In Trump's vision, these videos would include footage from the executions, if not the exact moment of death. It's just a lead up to it. It's a nice little artistic close up on the eyes of a person whose life is about to be snuffed out by the power of the state. So that's fun, Trey. What do you think?
That last part is literally some Starship Troopers stuff. Like that's out of like Paul Verhoeven's satire from 30 years ago. I mean, literally, they had execution footage as like hype videos in that movie. He's so like comically over the top and on the nose and hard to, you know, determine. It all seems, it's hard to believe that it's all real, but you know, with him, it is real. I also wonder like what inspired this? Like, was he, you know, going to executions and he didn't think they were theatrical enough or it was boring, or he's like, why does that guy get to sit down? That's not fair. He should be, you know, bent over or standing up with a bunch of other guys or then get shot or their heads chopped off. Or I don't know. I can't see Trump admiring the French overly much, but you know, I just wonder where he's getting these ideas from. He's something else, man.
I don't know, man. There was a shot in an episode of Last of Us of a bunch of people about to be hung. It is entirely possible that's what spurred this. He was watching some TV show. He was watching Back to the Future 3, and he's like, you know what? That's dramatic. Let's bring that back. Anyway, he has a method to his madness, or maybe just more madness to his madness. According to a source, the former president believes that this would help put the fear of God into violent criminals. He wanted to do some of these things when he was in office, but for whatever reasons didn't have the chance. Anyway, by the way, this is not the first time that he's apparently had this idea of using grisly footage to try to influence public opinion. At one point, there was an anecdote from a former aide that the then president demanded footage of people dying in a ditch, bodies stacked on top of bodies, so that his administration could scare kids so much that they'll never touch a single drug in their entire life. And this might spur memories in some of you viewers. While he's perfectly happy to execute, even publicly, many different types of people, there has always been one sort of person that he would especially love to kill, and that's any drug dealer ever. And so while Trump spokespeople reached about this, Rolling Stone News said that it's fake or whatever, when they're lying, it's totally true. They did say, when they were asked about firing squads, they referred Rolling Stone to lines from his 2024 campaign announcement, quote, "Every drug dealer during his or her life on average will kill 500 people with the drugs they sell, not to mention the destruction of families. We're gonna be asking everyone who sells drugs, gets caught selling drugs, to receive the death penalty for their pain. You've just got to kill these people." That's what he said. And so drug dealers especially have to be killed, Trey.
Yeah, well, this is him getting pages out of his like authoritarian ruler homies playbooks, I think, like the Filipino ruler. Yep. You know, he was really into Duterte. Yeah. I often mispronounce words, and I knew the spelling of it, but I was like, I'm going to butcher that if I try to say. So thank you, Duterte.
I probably did too.
Okay, well, either way, that guy was really big into, like, I remember his propaganda was that he'd like get on a dirt bike and ride through the streets shooting him himself and stuff. And I'm sure Trump thinks that's like superhero stuff, because
definitely,
you know, the Trump's version of superhero stuff is like the Boys' version of superhero stuff, you know, the Amazon show, like the Homelander version. Trump takes that totally unironically. So yeah, he's just always been jealous of, you know, dictators and iron fists and stuff, and has always admired their tactics. And I feel like that's where a lot of this is coming from.
I think that you're probably right. If anybody watching this wants to get an idea of the psychology of someone like a Donald Trump, you really should watch The Boys. It's a great show, and it gives you a look into his mind. By the way, how much would you pay just to see Donald Trump try to ride a dirt bike?
It'd be great. Well, that's what, right. But like, someone will send him a painting that they commissioned with, it's him shirtless on a dirt bike with like a bald eagle swooping behind him, and he's got rock solid abs. He's firing an AR-15 or whatever in front of an explosion, right? And he just, to him, he's like, oh, I can remember when I did that. Or like, he interprets that as reality. It's like, you know, he's like, yeah, I could totally do that. And then he slips, falling down another, you know, slightly elevated ramp in September.
Okay, I am definitely going to try to create that artwork, because it needs to exist now. But anyway, look, we're joking, you know, that at least for me is a defense mechanism, but he could very well be president again. And the thing is, all of this stuff that I think many of our viewers they'll react with horror at the idea of these sorts of things. And I think if you were to honestly poll the American people, I think the majority would be horrified by it. But
let me cut in and say, I'm horrified by the notion of any of this actually happening. If we started televising mass beheadings of drug dealers, I'd be alarmed. Okay, don't get me wrong, and I would be upset by that, very much so. It's just, yeah, like you said, I'm a comedian. It's just sort of how I process things, and he's just so easy to make fun of too. Until it gets real, and then you start losing sleep. So, yeah.
I wonder what percentage of the country would be like, hell yeah, sign me up. Is it 20%? Is it 30%? I think it's millions of people would love to see just a line of people, someone who sold some marijuana, a bi second grade teacher, whatever, a drag queen. Like, this is where it gets dark in the story. But if a mass figure came out with an AR-15 and gunned them down, at least tens of millions of Americans would cheer until they lost their voices.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's been one of the most alarming things about the era of Trump to me, is that, like, you knew those people existed, but I didn't. I had no idea there was nearly as many of them as there clearly are. And the numbers you pulled, I would, you know, throw out the same one, somewhere between 20 and 30, I think, at this point, or it's like his hardcore people. But like you said, that's a lot. That's a whole lot. That's an alarming amount of people who would, you know, scream and cheer some of this stuff. And it's scary to think about.
It's honestly horrifying. So look, everyone get ready for a year of this sort of stuff, both because Donald Trump is going to be in the news, and this is honestly the sort of stuff he likes, but also he wants to reassure his base that he can be 10 times the dictator that Ron DeSantis could ever like try to be. Like, he is going to be coming out with this stuff specifically to reassure his base that he's their guy. So get ready for it to get wild. That said, I want to turn to some of the crazy disaster related stuff going on in the news. So whenever we're ready, why don't we jump into the first video of this next block?
They said it's three school buses wide. Okay, well, do you guys remember on 9/11 when an airplane crashed in Pennsylvania? A jetliner. Remember that? It didn't kill anybody on the ground, killed everyone on board. But it didn't kill anyone on the ground.
Yeah, I remember that. I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people are horrified by that event and probably horrified by your casual folksy reference to it. And I know that because she was at the Kootenai County Republican Central Committee, which I would say is an easy crowd for her generally. And it was silent there. Because what the hell are you talking about, Marjorie Greene? First of all, the boneheaded idea that because something was in the air and hit the ground and didn't kill people, thus it's always a great idea to do it, is insane. But in particular, to so casually invoke one of the greatest domestic tragedies of our living memory to score a political point against Joe Biden after he literally shot it down the way you wanted him to, he just waited a little bit longer than you would have preferred, is a really, really weird way to try to win over a crowd. Trey, what do you think?
Not only do I remember that, I would go so far as to say that I will never forget that happening, because that's sort of the whole thing with that day. I don't think many of us are gonna forget it anytime soon. But this is what she does. That whole part of it, I felt like it was so obviously just them grasping at anything they could to go after Biden for with how he handled the first balloon scenario, because it's like so easy to understand the rationale for why he waited to shoot it down over the water. It's like a sick, you know, my 9-year-old could immediately grasp that, and everyone can, but they got to have something to froth and rage about with anything where he's taking control of it, especially. So they went with that. And then once you decide to go with that, you got to like back up why you're so mad that he didn't shoot it down over, you know, inhabited areas. And this is just what she landed on. It doesn't make much sense, but you know, that's sort of par for the course for her.
Exactly. Look, and to your general point that they just need something to froth about, I 100% agree. And look, very often on this show, we're critical of them plucking nonsensical stuff from across the country to get mad about, whether it's like, you know, the footwear on a cartoon M&M or something. But honestly, if the alternative is these bizarre invocations of 9/11, then I would prefer that they go back to it. And I don't know what needs to happen to provide that. I don't know if maybe like, I don't know, General Mills could put the Trix Rabbit in a belly shirt or something, like whatever it is that can get them fired up. I would really prefer that to them talking about this sort of thing.
Well, dude, you say this sort of thing. Maybe 9/11 is relatively new, but like, how many Holocaust analogies have you heard from them? Like during
specifically
COVID
from
with
her.
The vaccines and exactly. It's like they compare, you know, it's like really the type of persecution that we conservatives are going through in this country has only been experienced during World War II. You know, we've got it exactly as bad today as the Jews did during the Holocaust, they say with a straight face, you know. And I don't know, even like 9/11, you know, nothing's going to surprise me coming from them at this point, is what I'm saying. And when you talk about them playing this type of card, I feel like they love to draw this card and throw it on the table.
They definitely do. So I'm not gonna make the audience deal with any more of Marjorie Greene's actual audio for right now. But what I will tell you, I will remind you first of all that Marjorie Greene, before she entered Congress, she publicly doubted that a plane had actually hit the Pentagon on 9/11, and you know, God knows what else she had to say about 9/11. If you want to find out the sort of things that she probably believed, just go on 4chan or something, and it's whatever is posted there. That's what she believed. But interestingly, we found out today, there was some breaking news, that when the F-16, which engaged one of these objects over the past few days, shot at it and shot it down. It did eventually shoot it down. The first shot missed. Now, thankfully, the missile didn't apparently cause any damage. So, hey, her hypothesis worked out. Something landed and didn't kill anyone. But it could have. And also, the missile cost $400,000. And I'll remind you, the first one wasn't hit, so they had to use other means to take it down. $400,000. Think about the good that could be done with that money. But now, because people like Marjorie Greene and Mike Pompeo and Tucker Carlson, everyone freaked out about the balloons, now you got F-16s and F-22s crisscrossing the country looking for anything bigger than a sparrow to nuke from orbit. And every time they do that, that is costing millions of dollars. But Biden apparently feels like he has to do that now because he got criticized. And this is just a massive distraction. It's also a massive waste of money. That money, Trey, I'm sure there's a lot of different areas of the country that could desperately use that. You know, the people of East Palestine probably would love $400,000 right about now.
Right. Yeah, but like, you know, our military is spending that, they've been that way forever now anyway, spending insane amounts of money that we could use elsewhere. Like, it genuinely would not surprise me if a report came out that said that they were like setting up milk jugs at the other end of the base to shoot down with those $400,000 missiles, just like because they got bored or whatever. Look, I support the troops and all that. I do. I got a lot of buddies that are troops. Don't misinterpret me. I'm just saying, the DOD and their, you know, their spend happy nature and everything has been a thorn in my side for a long time because of exactly what you mentioned at the end of that segment there, what we could use that money for otherwise, you know. But.
Well, look, I mentioned, you know, the train derailment. So I want to give people, we've been trying to keep track of that story. So let's give you just a little bit of an update. We're not that many days out from the Norfolk Southern train derailment in East Palestine. And the aid that's been provided so far, obviously not measuring up to the damage that's already been done and the great fears about the long-term health effects to both humans as well as animals. The likelihood, by the way, I don't know if this has really been mentioned much, but if you live in that area, not only are you terrified about what effect it's going to have on you and your family and all of that, but also, if that area is now contaminated by all of these chemicals, some of which we know about, some of which we don't, what about the people who own homes in that area? What happens to their property value if they try to sell, if that whole area is now considered effectively America's Chernobyl as a result of this train derailment? Anyway, there are lots of concerns going forward, and residents are now starting to organize to make sure that they are taken care of. Multiple class action lawsuits have already been filed against the train company. 4 suits across state and federal courts. Residents in these suits are arguing that the company's poor handling of hazardous materials like vinyl chloride was negligent. Not only that it was on the train in the first place, but that the train apparently, whatever the mechanical problems or the braking problems were, that's negligence too. Also, they did the intentional burn of it. And we don't even know if we know all of the chemicals that were actually on it at this point. But in the end, close to 2,000 residents within a 2-mile radius were forced to evacuate. And thus far, the company has now put out their plan for what they're going to do going forward. But in terms of money, they've offered $25,000 to the town, and residents within 1 mile can get a $1,000 convenience check from the company. Bear in mind, 2 miles worth of people were evacuated, but you have to be in that first mile to get $1,000 from the company. So, Trey, we're obviously in the very early days of something that's going to play out legally for years, probably, let alone the long-term health impacts if those manifest. But what do you make of what's happening with the train derailment?
Oh, it's absolutely enraging. I mean, I'm from a small town, and it just feels like this is the type. I mean, well, this is like a crazy, egregious example of it. But, you know, no one cares about people in places like this, and like big corporations especially don't. And the amounts that they've thrown out as like restitution, it seems like they decided on those like to deliberately insult these people. Like that's yes. how it seems to be. It's like lining them all up and just slapping them in the face, and then you know, here we'll give you $1,000 if you get down and kiss the ring and show us your gratitude. Maybe we'll consider doing it. It's like that's their attitude towards the whole thing that drives me insane. It's so out of touch and upsetting. And I know we got to go to a break, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more afterwards. So, but yeah, I really don't like it.
No, I don't either. And don't worry, but we got some flexibility. Like if this is something you're passionate about, feel free to let me know what you think. But yeah, the $25,000, like I don't know who advised the top right. brass that's what they should offer, but yeah,
the whole town.
Good at their job.
Well, it's like you're like, how much could a town like this be worth, really? And then then they're like, you know, the type of people that lives in towns like this, like $1,000, you know. That'll buy all sorts of Spam and Velveeta. They should be happy about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so gross. Like, they know how money works. They know what money is worth. They know how nothing at all that amount of money is. And they also know everything you said about the long-term implications of this for these people. Like, dude, they're probably not ever going to be able to go back, probably. Or if they do, who knows how long? Or, you know, if they do, they get blessed with cancer and a third eye and whatever else over this stuff for like decades to come. Yeah. It's like, I mean,
do you feel comfortable going back there? Like it would take a long time.
Of course not. And it's like the very least a massive corporation could do, because it is a small town, is just like it's also just so short-sighted, because just take care of these people. It won't cost you that much in the grand scheme of things. Make an actual genuine effort, and maybe you won't come across as like a comically evil dystopian, you know, technocratic overlord from some future comic book. You know what I mean? Which is what they're doing right now. It's like, it's just crazy to me. But it's literally only about the amount of money in versus the amount. And they're like, well, you know, we're going to be out a lot of money already anyway, so we can't really afford to give any more to these people. And there's just so many other implications that never factor into it for them, which is why we have to regulate them heavily, because they will not ever do any of that themselves. You know, they had like Civil War era brake systems on these trains that they've been told they needed to change for forever, but they were like, well, that might be a little expensive. So they just didn't. And who knows what else? Like they don't care about you. You cannot trust them. They have to be forcibly controlled.
Right? I agree.
And the only entity that can do that is the government, whether people like it or not. Right. And
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you still believe at this point that companies will voluntarily self-regulate, voluntarily do the right thing, and you want to know how much their voluntary stuff is worth, it's worth $25,000. That's what it's worth.
Right. And not for nothing, but you know, the Republicans are the ones who preach all that, like small government, let them regulate themselves or whatever. And I don't know, I haven't looked into it, but I know that like the part of Ohio this is from is largely red and everything. And I just hope that people in other places like this take note of this. Like one side is the one who's enabling these companies to do stuff like this. And when they do it, if you think your heroes in the Republican Party are going to swoop in and do anything about it, you're wrong. They don't care. They also do not care about you. And this example, this story playing out, tragic as it is, illustrates that. And I don't know. I just hope more people take note going forward. Like this is the future that they want, that one side wants, and that the corporations want right here. This is what it looks like.
Exactly. Okay, we're gonna take our first break. When we come back, lots more news to get to, including the Republican primary now has its first challenger. We'll break it down after this. Okay, everybody, welcome back to the show. If you're just joining us now, please hit that like button. And with that, let's jump into more news.
You should know this about me. I don't put up with bullies. And when you kick back, it hurts them more if you're wearing heels. I'm Nikki Haley, and I'm running for president.
Well, we've got our first challenger. Nikki Haley, as expected from a week or two ago, has launched her presidential bid. She is the first Republican to openly go against Donald Trump. Not only literally, she's running against him, but also That is very much the way that he perceives it and the way he has spoken about it, is that this is some sort of betrayal. Anyone who runs against him, especially her, who had previously said that she would not if he were running again, he sees it as an affront and he will try to convince his base that that is what it is. I want to start off, Trey, with our reaction based on what she chose to focus on there. So she had that line about standing up to bullies. We all know exactly who she's talking about there, and it ain't Joe Biden. And her little line about when you kick back, it hurts more when you're wearing heels. I think that's a good line, but that implies that she's going to hit him back, hit him where it hurts. Do you buy that? I don't know.
No, I mean, no, I don't buy that. But also, like, I don't know. Is that line really going to play with their base? I mean, maybe I'm being, you know, close-minded here, but they're not into women doing stuff or anybody else wearing heels, you know, like they, they don't like either of those things. So it seems like an odd choice to me. But I mean, I may live to regret these words for sure, but part of me is kind of looking forward to the, like, muck raking and hair pulling that's going to go on just on their side over the course of the next, you know, couple years as we head towards 2024, because it's going to get wild, I think, because, you know, you have people challenging Donald Trump, feeling personally betrayed. Look at what he says about people when he doesn't feel personally betrayed by them. You know what I mean? He insults their family and stuff. Like, what is he going to do with these people, you know? And then and you know, the rise of DeSantis and all that stuff, like them, I just hope they tear each other apart from the inside. But it should be at least, you know, morbidly entertaining either way. We'll see.
I think that is a great description of what it is going to be. It's morbidly entertaining. Yesterday it was revealed that Donald Trump has he already had Ron DeSanctimonious as his nickname. He added Shutdown Ron and Meatball Ron. So they're gradually getting a little bit lower in age and much dumber as time goes on. He started off with a vocabulary word that someone had to explain to him, and now he's calling him food. So to Nikki Haley, and this is a direct address to you because I know you watch the show. I hope you are prepared for what he's going to say about you, because as much as Donald Trump loves to insult everyone, and he does, as much as he loves to insult people like Ron DeSantis, who he sees as turning on him, backstabbing him, this guy utterly despises women in particular. And, you know, I'm not asserting that he's the first Republican politician who's misogynistic. That's like the base level. But he goes above and beyond. The stuff he is going to say about her is going to be so fundamentally gross and personal, and it's going to be stuff about her appearance and stuff about, is she married? If she is, about her husband. If she's not, then whatever that is, he's going to talk about. It is going to get, I mean, look, Trey, he already called Ron DeSantis a pedophile. Like, that's
right.
He hasn't even launched his run yet. He's already calling people pedophiles. So
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, and it's kind of like I said, morbid curiosity about just how far he could take this. Cause that's what I mean. It's like, he's already, you know, the bar is so high for like lunacy and lack of decorum with him, whoever he's dealing with. So people that he feels like personally slighted by, and he's like feels an actual vendetta on a grand stage, it's going to get gnarly, dude. It's going to be it's going to be wild.
I think it is. By the way, I see Ryan in the chat says, does she really watch the show? No, I don't think that she does. But you never know. A lot of people do. Anyway, as of right now, it is probably going to be difficult for her. She's in the most recent Reuters Ipsos poll, she's at 4% of registered Republicans compared to 43% for Donald Trump. By the way, in advance of her launching, Donald Trump bleated on Truth Social, Nikki has to follow her heart, not her honor. She should definitely run. So look, he kind of has belittled the idea of Ron DeSantis running against him, but I think that he doth protest too much. But when he's mocking Nikki Haley, I think he actually is fine with her running. I don't think that he particularly cares, and he probably sees it as helping to split the anti-Trump vote. Like Ron DeSantis, Mike Pompeo, Mike Pence, like I feel like their voters probably have more in common with each other than with people who are still with Trump on the Republican side. But we will see as more people run. Apparently, Tim Scott is reportedly seeking to run. We don't know when that's going to happen. It could be tomorrow. It could be in 3 months. We don't know. But as of right now, we want to show you Morning Consult's look at the state of this race if all of these different people ran. Donald Trump has close to half the support. Ron DeSantis is the only other person with significant, with 31%. And then it drops down to Mike Pence at 7. You have a couple threes, Ted Cruz, Liz Cheney. And then after that, it drops down to like 1%. So I don't know, Trey. It really does seem like this is going to come down to Donald Trump. Well, either definitely Donald Trump if Ron DeSantis decides not to run, or probably Donald Trump even if Ron DeSantis does decide to run. I don't see what the point of these other runs is unless it's brand building or something like that.
No, I mean, me neither. You know, the Republican Democratic primaries, like sometimes people come from out of nowhere, you know, as they get going. That's how Trump did, and then surge late. But I mean, yeah, it seemed like a 2-horse race in this one for me for a long time, and I thought that was the general consensus. I never know. I mean, like you said, I mean, except for if it's someone who no one really has heard of who runs for president and they get on the debate stage and now people have heard of them and it just boosts their image or whatever. But outside of that, like serious politicians, I don't understand why you would dive into this particular race either. But I mean, can you really call any of these people serious politicians? I'm not going to lie, though. I'm a little bit, I had been thinking and had been under the assumption that like DeSantis was closer with Trump than that, like that it was going to be like a real knockdown drag out between the two of them, because I thought there was sort of like two Republican parties at this point. There's like, you know, the frothing MAGA contingent that were, you know, the 20 to 30% we're talking about earlier, and then the ones who are still lying to themselves that there's some semblance of like, you know, rationality and sensibility left, and you know, the party of their fathers and whatnot, and whoever they're going to back.
I think you might still be onto something. I mean, that distribution we were just showing includes so many other candidates. I'm speculating here, but if it was just DeSantis and Trump, I feel like a lot of those other votes would go to DeSantis. It would be much closer than it looks. But we'll have to see. I mean, will Ted Cruz run? Will Mike Pence run? You know, stay tuned and find out. Anyway, with that, why don't we turn to what one of the potential candidates has been getting up to recently. Whenever we're ready, let's jump into this D block.
So this College Board, like nobody elected them to anything. They're just kind of there and they're providing service. And so you can either utilize those services or not. And so they've provided these AP courses for a long time. But you know, there are probably some other vendors who may be able to do that job as good or maybe even a lot better. So I've already talked with Paul, and I think the legislature is going to look to reevaluate kind of how Florida's doing that. Of course, our universities can or can't accept College Board courses for credit. Maybe they'll do others. And then also just whether our universities do the SAT versus the ACT. I think they do both, but we're going to evaluate kind of how all that process goes. But at the end of the day, we highlighted things that were very problematic. And I'll tell you, it wasn't just people like me saying that. Across the political spectrum, people were saying that, like, you know, this really is junk. Why don't we just do and teach the things that matter? Why is it always someone has to try to jam their agenda down our throat?
So that is Ron DeSantis, who has spent the years of his governorship jamming his agenda down the throats of everyone who doesn't agree with him in Florida. He is presenting himself as some sort of defender of, you know, stopping politicization of education, as he literally decides personally what your kids get to learn and what's too spooky, too scary for them to find out about. And so because he decided to pick a fight with every scholar of African-American politics, queer politics, all of that, that led to the College Board responding to him and criticizing him. They've called him a liar for the things he's said about the AP African-American studies courses, as well as his communications with the College Board. He's apparently just been openly lying about what has actually been going on. So now it escalates to him saying he's considering just getting rid of the College Board's influence over Florida, just getting rid of it entirely, and someone else can do it. I don't know, some mega church in Texas that produces books about the Ark or something, those will be what AP courses are going forward. This might just be a stunt. A lot of what he does is, all of his stuff about gas stoves, just nonsensical. It has nothing to do with the people of Florida. But as of right now, this is the path that he's taking to becoming the Republican nominee. picking all of these fights with what he would declare to be like woke orthodoxy. But the victim at every step of the way is the people of Florida and their ability to actually live a modern life and learn what reality is. Trey, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, so I saw this picture pop up on the internet again the other day from like 1963 civil rights era. And it was these three protesters at a sit-in at a diner getting like mustard and ketchup and syrup and stuff poured all over them by this, again, keep using this word, frothing crowd of, you know, hateful white people in Mississippi. And it was like, you know, that's not that long ago, really. It's like 60 something years ago. And this is the exact type of thing that they want kids to not find out happens. Like, why? Because it's, you know, because they feel like personally connected to it, or it feels like, you know, dangerous to them for people finding out that this type of thing has gone on, or that we really did do this. It makes it easier to travel down a fascist road, I think, when people don't have reminders of past horrors like that from even recent history in your country. So it just behooves them to sort of, you know, keep people uneducated, because the more people, you know, learn, the more questions they ask, and the more they, you know, have doubts about the established order and whatnot. And it all makes sense from a very macro scale, but it's, you know, really alarming. I mean, again, it's like sci-fi dystopia stuff. You know what I mean? It's like we're getting into Fahrenheit 451 territory now. Like we're already cut. We're doing Starship Troopers, Fahrenheit 451. You know, you name it. We're checking, going through all those, which is ironic because they would probably hate all of those books.
They would probably ban all of those
books. Yeah, they haven't already. 100%. They probably will.
Yes, let's make those references while people out there in the audience can still get them, right? Because the next generation probably won't. Yeah. What's gonna become of the kids there? Like, what is a college education going to be worth in 10 years from Florida? It's so sad that he has been able to hoodwink so many conservatives into thinking that this is in their interest, that this has anything to do with them or their kids.
Right. I just wish, you know, that whether, like in terms of history classes and stuff, I just wish that whether or not a thing happened was a larger criteria for, you know, whether kids learned about it or not, because I thought that's how history was ostensibly supposed to work. And I know history is always written by the victors and all that, you know, but putting that aside, like it shouldn't matter. I don't buy into the fact that kids get psychological problems or feel personally shamed by history lessons anyway. Like, oh no, I'm a bad person and now I need therapy because my teacher told me about slavery. Like, I don't buy into that anyway, but like however it makes someone feel should be immaterial to whether or not, you know, the importance of a subject being taught. You know what I'm saying? Like, it, some of that stuff is supposed to make you feel bad, all right? If it doesn't make you feel bad, something's wrong. And that's also part of the point, because that's how you avoid, you know, letting it happen again. And it's all like, again, it just seems like elementary stuff to me that I can't believe we're arguing about, except I can, because I know what they're really trying to do ultimately, you know.
And what country we live in.
Yeah.
And it would be one thing if they were doing all of this, that they were censoring stuff left and right, getting rid of the books to protect the feelings of school kids. It would be a little bit easier to accept that if they weren't at the same time the party who says that they're against cancel culture and against censorship.
Right.
Oh, and they're also the party that spent the last 10 years telling everyone, why do you need a safe space? Why do you need a trigger warning? Like, it was just projection all along.
Absolutely. All the snowflake talking, oh, you get your feelings hurt and F your feelings and all that stuff. And they're the most thin skinned, easily offended people on planet Earth. It's everything is always projection with them. Everything. I mean, you opened this segment with the whole, you know, we're not going to let them shove their agenda down our throats, when that's like item one on their agenda is forcing it on the rest of us. It's all projection with them.
Top the classes
projection all the way down.
100%. Exactly. I like that reference too. That's another book that they might ban. The classes are voluntary. It, by definition, is not being forced on you. You can choose it or not. They're stopping the classes from existing. That's forcing. That's not an optional voluntary thing. Anyway, so everyone, just again, I'm going to say this a lot, especially in the beginning part of this primary. Prepare yourself, because on the one hand, we're going to have a little bit of fun with the nonsense and the attacks and all that. But then on the other hand, you have people like Ron DeSantis who are going to use their position as governor to do insane, deranged, fascist, I almost swore, stuff. to get his base into a, to quote Trey, a frothing crowd. Okay, during the break, we were actually talking about some of Trey's upcoming shows. If people want to know what to check to see if you're going to be in their area, where's the best place to find that out?
Yeah, thanks, John. If you guys want to see me live, and you should, it's a good time. Just go to TreyCrowder.com, T-R-A-E Crowder.com. I tour all over the place all the time. So yeah, come and see me, TreyCrowder.com.
Awesome. By the way, I'm glad that, you know, we're at least at a state where, you know, those sorts of tours can happen again.
Yeah, tell me about
it. Period where you couldn't. I'm sure it's great for you too.
Oh yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, being like a live entertainer during like the height of the pandemic was not a good time. Glad to be able to do shows again.
Yeah. Okay, well, with that, why don't we continue this show? We're gonna be starting off with news that's a little bit rough, but state of the country. So let's jump into it. More and more Republicans are starting to get into the idea of getting little kiddos like over there back into the workforce. Okay, they're attacking US child labor laws as violations continue to rise in a number of different places. Well, look, that can mean a lot of different things. I want to be fair. We're going to dive into some of the legislation that has been proposed and see if we think there's any value to it. Bear in mind that we're talking about multiple different states where lawmakers are seeking to decrease the current regulations on child labor. So starting off in Iowa, Republican legislators introduced a bill in January to expand the types of work that 14 and 15 year olds would be permitted to do as part of approved training programs, extend allowable work hours, and exempt employers from liability if these young workers are sickened, injured, or killed on the job. We can have a little bit of a conversation maybe about exactly what sorts of positions should be open to 14 to 15 year olds. That might be fine. Maybe an argument about exactly how many hours per week they should be able to work. Okay. But when you are specifically trying to lower the liability for corporations, if their young workers die, you lose the right to call yourself a party that's trying to save the children. That's the only point that I would want to make there. In any event, the bill in Iowa would permit the director of Iowa Workforce Development or the Iowa Department of Education to grant exceptions from any provision that restricts the types of jobs 14 and 15 year olds can do if the work is classified as part of a work-based learning program, and also strips workers' compensation rights for these workers. So we're gonna jump to some other states as well, Trey, but I'm curious what you think about some of what's being proposed so far in Iowa.
Well, it's just some of the things that they propose or come out with, it boggles my mind because I'm like, I don't know how you propose things like this without realizing that like you're the bad guys or whatever. Like you would think there's only one right side to be on of the debate over whether children should be, you know, worked in the salt mines or whatever. But like, they just want to push us backwards in every direction. Like that, you know, they wouldn't mind if it was still like the days of Victorian era street urchins where it's like, well, they're the only ones that fit up the chimneys, isn't it? You know, like that, they wouldn't bother them at all. And it's wild to me. At the same time, they're like raising the retirement age. You know what I mean? It's like, they just want you, they're like lowering the age at which you can enter the workforce and raising the age at which they'll allow you to leave it. And it's like, they clearly just want to have you available as a labor asset and you work every day of your life until you die and thank them for the privilege. And you know, that's all they care about.
Yeah, 100%. Start earlier, end later, and that's pretty much it, man. Like, I thought it was gonna be bad enough when like the robots were gonna take our jobs. Apparently they're gonna take the good jobs. We're still gonna have to work. In fact, we're gonna have to work more and the robots are gonna have the better jobs. In any event, that's Iowa. In Minnesota, there was a bill January 2023 to extend work hours for 14 and 15 year olds. Republicans passed the bill after it was vetoed by Governor Tony Evers. Phil Murphy, by the way, who is a Democrat, signed a similar law to Wisconsin's in 2022 that expanded work hours for 14 and 15 year olds to work longer hours during summer months, on holidays, and expanded allowable work hours for 16 and 17 year olds. In Ohio, legislators reintroduced a bipartisan bill this year to extend workable hours for 14 and 15 year olds with permission from a parent or legal guardian. So look, philosophically, I will say that even trying to move in a direction where as young as 14, we're encouraging people to work more and more hours, I don't particularly like that philosophically. That stuff doesn't bother me nearly as much as the stripping away protections or like if you're injured, letting you work more dangerous jobs. I hate that way more. Look, I started working as a busboy, I think, at 14 or whatever. Right. I was from a family that didn't have any means. I desperately needed to do this. That said, if I got injured, in theory, I would be protected. I wasn't working insane hours. It was already bad enough for me. But I just don't like the direction this is clearly pointing in, Trey, where kids should be able to be kids. Ahead. They should be learning. They should be developing whatever their career is going to be or trade they want to get involved in. They shouldn't be ground down at the age of 14.
No, of course I agree. I mean, I'm from a similar background. You know, I started working at an early age too, and it was like seen as like a source of pride and everything. But again, I mean, yeah, 14, 15 year olds, I think it's a different story. You know, a lot of the jobs they can get, but put a little more money in their pocket or whatever, it's not the end of the world. But it's like you said, it's the direction it points with. It's like they, I don't know. I just don't like the sense of entitlement of it either. It's like, you know, we should be entitled to work your children literally to death and not, you know, have any sort of repercussions for it. It's like the implication is, you know, well, if you're going to like sue us and make us pay a bunch of money just because a kid dies that we work to death, then maybe we'll take all these jobs and go somewhere else. How would you feel about that? You know, like the whole, they just act like Al Pacino and Scarface, like, you know, that we all need them screaming at us with, you know, Coke dripping out of their nose at the restaurant in revulsion and hatred. It's just also, I don't know, egregious. And the way they do it out in the open is, you know, like I was saying earlier, is the part that gets me. There's just no shame. No shame at all in some of the stuff they're trying. Some of the stuff they're trying to do, I get where they're going for, you know, from a bottom line perspective and all that. But at least do it with a little bit of shame. Try to hide the ball at least a little bit. Try to pretend like you're not doing what you're doing. But they don't. They don't care. It don't bother them at all.
I think to the extent that there's hiding, I think what the hiding they'll do is actually what you referenced there. They're going to talk about like, oh, you know, there's pride in work. So we're just trying to give kids a chance to have pride. Meanwhile, they're stripping away any workforce protection so that if your kid, you know, falls into a vat of liquid metal or whatever, you get nothing. They're not going to focus on that part. They're going to focus on the pride part or whatever. And they'll also say, you know, we desperately need this. Because there's a labor shortage or whatever. Right. Millennials are lazy. They'll demonize more workers as they encourage kids to work until their fingers are nubs. And you'll notice, though, that they're never going to advocate for like a higher minimum wage. Like, well, you know, if there's a labor shortage, then maybe if the companies would pay more money, then you get more people to work. No, it's always going to be making it easier to exploit, not more incentives to work.
Yeah, no, the actual economists all would tell you like a genuine labor shortage is treated by increasing wages, right? That's how you approach it, right? But there's not a genuine labor shortage in this country right now. It's just that they, you know, are still offering people slave wages and people are realizing they don't have to or want to work for that. And until they, you know, realize that and adjust it upward commensurately, they're going to be in the same position. But there's a theme emerging here with this and the train derailments. You know, it goes back to what I was saying earlier, where we have to force them to act right, you know, because they prove time and time again that if we don't, they won't. Like, they will work, you know, 12-year-olds by the vats of liquid chemicals. And when they fall in, they won't do anything about it. They'll still bottle up those liquid chemicals and put them on the, you know, on the shelf or whatever with little Johnny inside of it. Like they used to do that back, you know, before Utopia and all those books came out. Or what was it? Who's the author? Thomas something other.
Upton Sinclair?
Upton Sinclair. Thomas is way wrong. Before Upton Sinclair back in those days, they did all that stuff all the time, you know, and they want to take us back to that, you know.
Yeah. And I know what you're all thinking. Falling into pits of chemicals is how you get a lot of the better Batman villains. And I get it, but we'll find some other way. Like, I don't think we need that.
Yeah.
Anyway, with that said, that's all the time we have. How much time do we have this hour? Do I have time to read some comments? We have 30 seconds. Okay, maybe one or two. Spartan Dragon over on Twitch, thank you for being with us for 7 months. I see Sassy Snick saying, yay, it's Trey. Oh, hey, John. Thanks. Yeah, I'm more excited here than I am.
Come
too.
On, guys. I mean, I appreciate the love, but you know, you ain't got to be like that.
Exactly. Don't got to make it mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you everyone for joining us for our first hour on the podcast, on the linear platforms. Much appreciated. For the rest of you, there is more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.